kind of crazy. I'm going to New Zealand for the first time for Webstock, which I'm incredibly excited and terrified about. Not so much New Zealand, but
I was gonna say I've heard they're very nice.
Totally. Very congenial. Gonna get me on a Lord of the Rings tour or something. I don't know. I'm sure I just got uninvited to Webstock by saying
Hello and welcome to The Flyover Effect. I'm Scott Rocketship.
I'm Amanda Morrow.
And we're doing things a little differently this week. We got some good feedback at Demo, which is an event that I started up. And once a month, people come and show off what they're working on. And it's supposed to be kind of rough and early stage.
Kind of a show and tell.
It's not a pitch session. It's not my idea is totally formed and I'm going to pitch it. But just kind of here's where it's at and I'm looking for some feedback. So I bounced the podcast off of people and they just loved us. They wanted to hear more.
They loved us, but...
We love it, but people felt like they were a little confused. No, I don't know if confused is right, but just they wanted to know a little more context for the guests and maybe even just who we were. Mm-hmm. So Amanda and I are going to go off the path,
yep.
I guess.
Because we're really excited. Today we have Ethan Marcotte on. Mm-hmm. He's a pleasure to talk to. I think we were all really excited and we're all hyped up on caffeine. Ethan's leading the way kind of in responsive web design, or not kind of, he is leading the way in responsive web design and has a lot of really great new ideas that he throws out in front of people. We talked about that and a couple other things. He's at Brooklyn Beta.
So I'll put you on the spot first, Amanda. Since we don't actually get into it in the episode, what's your take on what responsive web design actually is?
I think it's, you know, we're in a world where not everybody uses the same browser, the same device. We're switching between our computer, our mobile devices, all these sorts of things. And it's really trying to factor that in when you're designing. So everything's accessible and easy to use. And so a lot of responsive web design is it responds to the device or browser or whatever you're using. And I think that's really important. And it's going to be even more important in the future, the more and more ways we access the web.
Awesome. I think he
hopefully I did him proud.
I think he would like that. I think he would like that explanation. You know, because coming into the episode, I'd been reading about it on a bit, and I followed if you follow Beep on Twitter, that's who we're talking
yes,
to.
Yes, yes. So, at Beep.
Like people probably are following him, and you know, this is why we're doing the intros now.
Yeah.
Because you might know this guy, but not know that you know this guy.
Yeah.
But Ethan is Beep on Twitter. So I've read just a few quick articles about responsive, and obviously I'm not a developer or a designer, mm-hmm. so the content is more my kind of bag. Like if the words are getting out there, I'm happy.
Yeah.
So my kind of layman's guys, interpretation of responsive web design was more about size. So if I resize my browser window, content scales, and it's still very readable and accessible.
Yeah.
And it responds to the idea that I'm 400 pixels wide, now I'm 1600 pixels wide, I get different button stacks, but just the most useful.
Yeah.
During the episode, Ethan seemed a lot more interested in kind of what's happening behind the scenes,
yep.
Which I think is a good thing for folks to listen to during this episode of what's happening behind the scenes to make it all the same content, to make it all the same database access, and kind of simplifying the back end of things so that if someone's on a phone or someone's on a desktop web browser, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah. And just recently he finished up the bostonglobe.com. That's the right one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Yep. And that's a perfect example of how, you know, the content responds to your browser or your screen. And so if you guys check that out before he starts talking, then you'll kind of know what we're going to get into. And he does mention that a few times. So.
All right. So this is episode 25 of The Flyover Effect with Ethan Marcotte. I'm on it. Amanda is on it. Dan is on it as well, our mm-hmm. boss at BitMethod. You can learn more about us at www.bitmethod.com. And here's Ethan talking about a previous Flyover Effect episode, actually.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a little subtle psychological warfare you can play right now. Oh, yeah, we've interviewed Megan Fisher. Yeah, it was pretty much the funniest hour ever recorded to audio. So that's.
See, I keep telling her that, and she, like, I don't know, she seemed kind of...
Don't buy it, Amanda. That's the shtick.
Oh yeah, yeah. I always
that's
forget
the
that.
Shtick. She got off that call and was like, oh yeah, I nailed that.
Yeah, broke a bottle of Cristal or something.
She also had experienced an earthquake earlier that day, so that, like, she was already kind of nervous. And
wasn't
then...
that just like an hour before?
Yeah, yeah, like it was right before the podcast.
That does not portend well. Yeah, wow.
But yeah, so no earthquakes today.
Yeah, no, thankfully. So what's going on with you guys?
Ooh, everything.
Yeah. What are we doing?
We have we always have 100 fires burning, or no, pots cooking, right? Not fires burning. That's bad.
Well, I would assume you'd need one for the other, I guess.
Yeah. But. Yeah. That's the fire helps the water boil, and then Dan doesn't cook much.
No.
Me neither. It's more of a button press microwave feed me thing, but
that's lunch.
Yeah. Right on.
Anyway, are you sure you poured coffee this morning, Dan? You didn't get an accidental beer?
Know.
Again.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the other day we had two growlers in the fridge. One had root beer in it, one had real beer, and he poured the beer one at like 11 o'clock in the morning.
That's our boss, everybody. Yep.
And just went with it. That was cool.
It was noon somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to see that episode of Mad Men.
Yeah, drinking beer out of a coffee cup.
Exactly.
I don't know. We have a very small team, so we're kind of always rolling on something. I do writing and marketing stuff, and Amanda does design, and so, and then our programmer is off in the other room programming, as he should be.
He's locked in the closet.
No, that sounds terrible, doesn't
yeah.
it?
We have him chained to a wall, and yeah. You know.
He's fulfilled his sunlight quota for the month.
Yeah.
Oh, make angle brackets now.
Neil's going to be mad at me. And it was just his birthday, too. Hey, boy, I edit this thing. I can take that out.
Did you tell him?
Yeah. It was, no, okay.
We do have a story about that.
Yeah.
Right?
He's I love Neil. We love Neil. He's a very particular guy. It was his birthday yesterday. Around 11:30, Amanda pops into the office and is like, Neil, it's your birthday. Let's go to lunch. And he looks thoughtful for a moment as he's chewing down on one of his beef sticks.
And drinking his coffee.
Yeah, and goes, I had a birthday dinner last night.
Let's do it next week.
Yeah. And we're just like,
everybody was planning on taking Neil out to lunch.
So yeah, none of us brought lunch, and then right. We all ended up going out to lunch mm-hmm. together without him. So.
That's fantastic.
We reported back how good his birthday lunch was to him. Yeah.
That's great. Wow. He just had entirely too much gaiety this week or something.
Apparently.
He's practical through and through. That's I had a birthday. I had a birthday meal. So we love you, Neil.
I don't want to overdo it, you know.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic.
So what have you been up to?
Well, later today I'll be celebrating Neil's birthday, apparently. Otherwise, not too much. I was in New York for a week, where I actually chatted with Megan about her podcast episode. But yeah, I was and among other things, went to Brooklyn Beta, which
awesome.
Is a really good time. Yeah.
What was the vibe out there? What's everybody all keyed up on?
Various and sundry things. I mean, Brooklyn Beta, I feel a little like imposter syndrome going to it because it's really targeted for people that are actually like designing a product or building a business, and I feel like I'm doing neither right now. But I mean, it's like stupidly inspirational. There's a lot of really great speakers, so it's just kind of interesting to kind of hear a lot of the design challenges that people have kind of experienced, you know, and hearing about where they are in their product's development or what they're kind of just generally excited about. So yeah, it's just generally rejuvenating, I guess. That's the first and last time I'm ever going to say that word out loud on a podcast. But,
well, it's good to see those worlds colliding, kind of responsiveness and web apps. Like you're seeing, you know, there's a lot of kind of informational websites that are relaunching with responsive designs. And
right.
there's a few products I've seen lately. Like we're all keyed up on Trello, which is kind of a task management app. And they have a really nice responsive design. That scales down pretty well. Like we're using it to mirror just a very traditional sticky board kind of post-it note system we used to have. And so when I've got it all full widescreen, it pretty much resembles the board we used to have. And then if I shrink it all the way down to the corner of the screen, it kind of stacks up nicely. So
yeah, it's almost like a feed more so.
I'm patiently waiting for the day that all of the Google suite of products have nice responsive designs. The calendar app makes me want to just pull my hair out every
I've
day.
I've never actually looked at that on a phone, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even just in a browser, like if you have it set to 7 days and then like resize the window just to like half of a traditional, like, you know, 1600 display, it's all squinched up and there's like two characters per line on all of your appointments. And
oh,
it's pretty rough.
Yeah, that does sound rough. Yeah, it's interesting. There's been this weird, like, I mean, I guess a year on this whole like responsive design discussion, there's been like recently it's like, oh, well, I don't know. This is like web apps versus websites discussion that seems to have popped up that, you know, I don't know. It just seems weird that we're trying to like draw these lines when I think it's really just more of a general design problem. Like, I mean, they're both sort of trafficking and content. Yeah, some of it's user created and some of it's a little bit more editorial. So,
and you're going to want the product to match too. Like a lot of web apps out there have kind of like one core feature that maybe has a pretty heavily designed interface, but then there's a lot of support material that's, you know, in the style of a more traditional website. Even some games, like we're all addicted to Glitch now at the office.
Oh man, totally. Yeah.
You know, they've got their little game world interface, but like the auctions and Realty and everything else is just, yep. I mean, that's just a website.
Yeah, totally. Know? Yeah, I mean, Flickr is the one I keep coming back to. I mean, it's a fantastic, I mean, it's one of my favorite sites on the web, but, you know, their mobile site definitely, well, it's fantastic, but there's obviously like large chunks of content kind of missing that I know are there. You know, if I go to a photo, I can't see who started. I can't see any of the metadata that people have added to my stuff, you know, to kind of enrich the experience. But I don't know. There was an interesting essay a couple months back. I don't know if Jeremy Keith wrote it or what, but he, you know, I wonder if a lot of this thinking about, you know, mobile versus desktop is just kind of inherited from sites that were kind of designed before we all became aware of the whole mobile web thing. You know, like if what would Twitter look like now? You know, if it was, you know, completely new experience, you know, would there be a lot more, I guess, overlap between the mobile and desktop experience? They've actually done a lot, really nice job kind of bringing those two closer together. But, you know, Flickr would be another one. Like, you know, if they sort of adopted that kind of mobile first approach, you know, how would that inform, I guess, the rest of the site?
Well, and then just with the idea of, you know, how like Instagram and all those other photo sites have taken off, like that's what I've kind of struggled with, too, is just the fact that Flickr, like I want to use it more in a mobile sense.
Yeah.
And it's not quite there, you know, like even just sharing stuff was a little tough. Yeah. I use like an Android device and that was like impossible for a while.
Yeah. I've never actually used any of the Flickr like native apps. I found the email interface is actually the main way that I post things on Flickr now. But yeah, no, I hear you on Instagram. That's definitely like one of the most seamless things ever. So. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of services are kind of having an identity crisis or at least a gut check moment too of like, are they prioritizing being a platform or are they prioritizing being a destination? Like how, you know, how important is it to Flickr that people still come to the Flickr website? Yeah, I don't know. I would think pretty important, but that's not how I'm using it. I had just kind of neglected my Flickr for a while. Now I got back into Instagram. That's how I'm filling it back up.
Cool.
I assume all my photos are posting. I don't know. I signed in. I tapped the little post to Flickr button. They're there.
Right.
I don't know.
Elves come into play at some point. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I have some huge Flickr following. Probably not. I would bet I'd get an email or two.
You're huge in Belgium right now. Yeah.
I guess one question I had back to the Brooklyn beta stuff is just what are some other things that, you know, people were really excited about while you were out there?
I don't know. I'm kind of an antisocial bastard. So, I mean, I kind of.
Well, I mean, like any talks that you saw or anything like that you thought was really cool.
One of the best that I saw, I have a two-part answer. The best that I saw was the guy from OkCupid, who actually is in charge of all their all those great data visualization posts that they've been doing on like statistics on their user base. You know, like who messages who, what the age ranges are. You know, like I don't know if you've seen any of those entries.
Oh, but, yes, oh, yeah. We have shared them around the office.
Lately. Yes. But it was, I don't know, I'm bad with math in general, but the guy was just like incredibly passionate about what you can do with Excel and this incredibly broad set of data. So it was just kind of fascinating to hear him talk about that, but using like open data as a way to just sort of saying the phrase marketing tool makes it sound a little bit more mercenary than he was making it out to be. But, you know, he was just incredibly passionate about communicating what it is their users are actually passionate about and, you know, how much they kind of care about it. So
what are you looking for when you go to those events like at Brooklyn? Like you said, you know, it's more of a product thing. But I mean, what kind of takeaways do you bring in, you know, when you're going back to doing, you know, websites?
I've been traveling a lot this year. And I mean, like I said, I'm kind of an antisocial bastard, but I kind of feel like a lot of people in our industry are fairly self-educated. I think that's changing now, you know, with actual curricula that are in schools and things. But I know for me, like when I first got online, you know, everyone that I was working with kind of fell into the web. And since I haven't had an office job, like an office job in a while, you know, going to conferences is kind of one of the best ways to kind of connect with other people and actually just hear how they're, I guess, approaching different problems. in different ways than I might. So it's just really just, I don't know, I just like those sort of incidental conversations about what people are kind of excited about, you know, whether it's responsive design or something completely different, and just kind of hearing like how they're using it in their work with like the specific problems that they kind of hit on a day-to-day basis. So I don't know, that I can't find the words to make that sound less Hallmarky. But yeah, it's just this organic like discussion crap that just sort of happens in the hallways that, you know, I find stupidly invaluable.
Is it odd being, I don't know, kind of looked to as someone that's at the forefront of one of the new web movements, like especially being a self-described antisocial bastard? I mean, is that weird? Are you doing any active shepherding of that? Is it something that's just kind of happening and just rolling with it? Or what's that been like?
It's odd. I mean, I never really like, I don't know. It's totally gratifying to hear people excited about this thing that I'm kind of excited about. And I'm not really a spotlight kind of person, so I'm more excited about sort of like pointing out interesting resources and interesting sites that other people have kind of like produced. So like I started a responsive web design Twitter account a couple months ago, and just like that's kind of the place where I'm sort of like, I don't know, trying to steer the discussion now. So that's been cool. But yeah, it's definitely been a little bit weird to just have those like impromptu conversations. I got recognized on the subway a couple months ago,
awesome.
Which is not a thing that's supposed to happen.
So like, no, I'm from the internet.
Yeah, exactly. Leave me my anonymity. But I mean, yeah, that was totally odd. I think I was updating Twitter at the time, so he probably saw my username or something. But anyway, yeah, it's definitely unnerving as hell. So,
do you get a lot of negative feedback at all? Like, that's always curious. I'm always wondering about that. Just yeah. If people kind of like, oh, you're dumb, and like try to like almost heckle you, you know?
Yeah, not to my face anyway.
Not on the subway yet.
Just trolls on the internet.
Right, exactly. Yeah, give it a couple months, but the backlash is about to start. There's definitely been a lot of criticism of responsive design, not so much me specifically. Most of the criticism is thoughtful in some way, whether or not I agree with it. You know, there's actually been some like passion and like time spent into like building those up. Like some of the first articles that kind of came up that were sort of negative, you know, once you get past sort of the kind of that initial like, why does somebody hate this shiny thing that I made? You know, there's actually some real worth to what they're saying. So, you know, Jason Grigsby, who's a fantastic mobile developer and designer in Portland, wrote this CSS media queries for mobile is fool's gold or something like that. And I think he might actually kind of regret the title, but what he was actually saying in the article was fairly common sense. Like he was actually pointing out some great considerations to kind of keep in mind for designing for the web in general and mobile devices specifically. So then there's another camp of articles that's, you know, there was some one going around about responsive web design being boring. You know, that's everyone is totally entitled to their opinions, but those are things that are a little less, they're harder to sort of engage in.
Yeah,
you know,
a little less substantive,
I guess. Yeah, maybe that's a good word for it. But you know, obviously it's something they care about, but yeah, so
it's
hard
also
to have.
So hard to have those judgments when stuff's still kind of early on, you know, like people aren't, not everyone is considering it when they're doing their stuff right now. And so I think as we get, you know, it seems like as people start figuring things out, it gets more creative, it gets more out there and edgy and things like that. So,
yeah, that's the thing. I think it's like, I personally value, like, I'm really excited to read essays where somebody's actually tried a responsive approach and things did not go well, or they felt like, you know, things could be better or something like that. They've actually tried to put it through its paces and they sort of see some issues with it in their workflow. Like that I'm really excited about versus the sort of like, you know, yeah, that sort of like substantive or like substance free, you know, this sucks.
Yeah, all subjective stuff.
Yeah, totally. So
where's all of this stuff moving towards now that you've put it out there and had time to hear what people are saying about it, criticisms, whatnot. Has it made you reconsider any of the?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, it's like Jason Grigsby's article, for example, definitely changed the way I sort of approach responsive design. I think that, like, for me, and this is just totally me talking, like the basic framework, like, you know, flexible layouts and media queries together, like that still feels like fairly important to me. But, or at least in my work. So the Globe was a really good example of how that stuff can kind of work on a large site, I guess. For me, it's more, I'm more excited about kind of moving past like the front end discussion, you know, because I feel like from a technical standpoint, that's not quite as interesting as some of these larger design questions about, well, so for the Globe, a lot of our design process wasn't so much about like thinking about how to make this site flexible and how to actually introduce media queries. That's relatively easy. And that's stuff you can sort of solve with design reviews and, you know, just iterating quickly over the product. But it's that larger question of, is this actually appropriate for somebody who's going to be on a tablet or on a mobile phone? You know, is this content appropriate for every user? So I guess I'm kind of excited to see like how responsive design can kind of affect things beyond the front end approach. Like, you know, if I'm starting at the beginning of a large project and thinking about content strategy or designing the UX, you know, what does that process look like? Because, yeah, we sort of fell into a workflow with the Globe and with some of my other projects, but I haven't yet sort of started right from the very beginning of a completely new project and kind of seen it through. I guess that's sort of where I'm at right now. I'd like to sort of see just generally like a larger discussion about how we work.
Well, I'm hoping it. It's something, you know, the front end bit, I think, is going to be nice just in the sense of helping keep it trendy, like in a good way of making it something that people are interested in and that people want. We've done some education locally and regionally just about kind of some best practices in mobile, not necessarily apps, not necessarily websites, just mobile as a medium, from very simple stuff like put your phone numbers and email addresses in plain text and not images so that people can click on them. And, you know, stuff that seems obvious to us, but, you know, even for, say, a bar restaurant website, you know, getting some of that.
Well, even the other day I was talking to like a small business owner and which I don't know if we really like that term, but that's basically what it was. I was just telling him things to think about, you know, like updating hours on Facebook, you know, and we talked about that in the mobile talk as well. Like, there's just so many more aspects to it than just your website or your app that people can access that information.
Right.
So.
And what's been hard is getting that, like selling best practices that people don't see or that is only going to affect a small subset of users, like that's hard. That's harder to convince clients of. It's like they don't see it, they don't feel it. Like all the back end stuff that would make the experience a lot better for somebody on a tablet or on mobile, if they don't see it, they're not as interested in spending money on it or dedicating time to it. But I think that's what's kind of nice of marrying the responsive approach with the scalable front end designs is like they see it and it's a little more tangible, you know, like, oh, cool, it fits on my phone and then it fits on my computer and it looks cool on my iPad. And I would like to see it, you know, eventually I could see it just kind of improving the web in a general sense, not just because the experience is better, but just because like you have to bring everything else up to this, you know, up to a certain level to make those designs work.
It's almost like it's a detail that we're like pointing out right now. Because I still get the like, oh wow, that's really shiny and nice as it compacts down. Like we have a local web startup called Locusic, and they've got just a website that's done in a responsive way, and it like collapses way down to a mobile site. And it still looks beautiful and is very, very functional. And I was just, I was blown away that was getting done here.
Especially since they've been around for what, like less than 6 months,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, very it's cool. Amazing. It's just a local startup, you know?
Man, that's very cool. Yeah, the browser resizing thing, I think it's definitely a lot of fun. I mean, I know for me, I feel like that's more of a prototyping tool. And Dan, I think getting back to your point about like actually being able to sort of prove the value. I know that one of the things that I've found really helpful for is kind of getting past showing designs off in like finished Photoshop comps or whatever and actually trying to move as quickly as possible into using like actual devices and browsers in design reviews. You know, so actually like building a prototype of a page and then actually just handing out like Kindles and, you know, a whole bunch of phones and tablets and actually just like starting a conversation about, you know, how they feel the design's actually shaping up in the browser. That seems to help with, I don't know, sort of like communicating why this is valuable and actually having some of those questions around content, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely imagine that being the case. Yeah. One of the things we've been pushing in our talk is just it seems mind-boggling to have to say this, but just pushing this idea of, you know, maybe you should get out a tablet or a Kindle or a phone and actually look at your website on it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little like the metaphor escapes me, but like people just don't want to look. They're afraid to peek under the rug and see, you know, because I think they have a sense that something might be bad, or they just kind of ignore it, or, you know, especially with the new technology, for someone that's not super tech savvy, that's not handling the web stuff, it might be easy for them to think, you know, well, maybe it's just me, you know, maybe it's my device, maybe it's my tablet, because that's what people were used to experiencing from the web. Like that very much could be the case if you're on an old browser or something. Oh, maybe it's just me. I bet it looks fine for everybody else.
But, Yeah. I mean, I know that when I first started, like, I guess designing beyond the desktop or whatever, that, you know, the phrase I heard the most often, this is back in like, what, 2007, 2008, was like, you know, a client needs an iPhone website. You know, there's that definitely, like, we try to map our own experiences to kind of the rest of the web. Mm-hmm. It is a scary, scary time in a lot of ways, but I don't know, I kind of think it's exciting too.
Talk to me about velocity. Like, how are you feeling this is picking up? Are you seeing it as still kind of a lightweight trend where a fewer high-profile clients are doing it? You know, I think it is telling that like our, you know, a Des Moines startup is kind of building responsive from the ground up. I think that's telling, but it's, I don't know. I wonder if it's hard for us to judge here in the Midwest, because I mean, even some of our sites and products right now aren't terribly responsive. We're doing a lot of native mobile apps for clients.
Oh, cool.
Which, I you know, I think are deservedly so. We're building some fairly complex interactions.
Sure.
And some nice native experiences, but what do you feel about just the velocity of this kind of design?
I mean, there's definitely been a lot of interest in it. I don't know. I mean, I'm bad at projections, but
sure.
And I'm fully prepared and would be very happy when somebody comes along with something better, you know, or whatever the next new hot thing is. But at least right now, like, it does seem like a lot of people are really excited about responsive design, and I know that there are going to be some other large-ish sites that are going to be launching with it, I guess, in short order. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I it's hard for me to kind of get wrapped up in like the mobile site versus responsive site discussion in general, because I really feel like you just said, like, you really have to kind of tailor the approach to the content, to the audience that you're designing for. So, yeah, I think it really just kind of depends. But I mean, I'm really excited to see what people have been doing with it. You know, it's just, I mean, as soon as, like, I mean, John Hicks, I think, was one of the first people to kind of launch with a responsive site after I came out with the article. And, you know, it's just, it's really cool to just sort of see, like, the different solutions people apply to, like, different devices, different breakpoints specific to their site and their content. So, I just geek out and resize my browser window all day. And,
do you make, like, little sounds when you do it? I just picture people being like, zoom, zoom, zoom.
Yeah, I might just giggle excitedly and clap my hands, but... Wait, I said that out loud.
I think that's a natural side effect of this trend. I definitely make sound effects when I
you kind of have to.
Yeah,
right?
when I'm resizing my apps, like,
we might need a responsive ringtone set or something. What are you guys doing after this?
Hey, we got the equipment. Let's do a few takes and. Amanda's kind of our sound effect queen now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or I just make random sounds. I don't know if I call them sound effects.
And by she's our sound effect queen, I mean I start recording generally 5 to 10 minutes before I tell anyone when we're doing the team podcasts. And you can
and it
capture
always ends up in the podcast.
And you can capture all kinds of great stuff.
I'm sorry I was a little late getting coffee, but that's fantastic. It was Michael Winslow, so...
Well, Ethan, thank you so much for being on the Flyover Effect,
yeah,
man.
Thank
this
you.
Has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for putting up with me.